I'm grateful to the invitation from Reverend Jason to be with you this morning. It's wonderful to see all of your faces. Well, most of my time in UU community is as a traveler and a guest. I'm a member of a church without walls called the Church of the Larger Fellowship, led by Senior Minister Reverend Meg Riley. Meg, good name. Reverend Riley sends out messages every week to her hundreds of members, including people who are imprisoned and people who are nowhere close to any of our member congregations. She wrote to us one week that there are many good reasons to feel some degree of instability these days, even panic that can lead us to desperate thinking. What can I buy, drink, eat, smoke, say, do that will make me feel better, even for a minute? Where could I move? How do I protect the people that I love? How much money would make me feel safer? She says that one way to keep calm may be to try to stay numb or detached, disassociated. But she warns we cannot afford to do that. For people coping with a chronic condition, they may feel well appraised of what Reverend Riley says, because to completely detach would often have dire results for their health, for their well-being. On one level, the desire to connect is a desire to survive, to get to the doctor, to pick up the prescription, to call the friend who will take you to the next doctor and answer the doorbell when the new medical equipment arrives. It's functional, but it's also precious. On another level, there's the desire we spoke about in the reading by Starhawk. We are all longing to go to where a circle of hands will open up to receive us, eyes that will light up as we enter, voices who will celebrate with us that we have come into our own power. Or if we have been sick or have had a bad week, or if we have been rocked by the events of our world, flung off our center, simply wanting those hands that will celebrate with us that we got dressed and we came to church today. With or without a chronic illness, the desire to stretch and extend ourselves to relationships with others can also pose a formidable challenge to our individual wounds, to feelings of brokenness. This week, I have been touched by the death of two celebrities. This is a chilling reminder in ways of the need or desire to connect, and the ways that even those we may feel we know deeply, we may not know everything about what they're going through. Perhaps the need or desire to connect brought you here today. How glad I am for each of your presence. Your life is precious. This time is precious. I never really understood that preciousness of time until my own first long cycle of fatigue. Not just a bit sleepy, but fatigue. I had about 4 hours of awakeness to deal with during the day, which I had to use strategically, and it had to be the right 4 hours. If it were the wrong time of day, my legs or shoulders would feel so heavy I couldn't stand for a long time. And if something got in the way, if the cat started meowing in the middle of the night while I was asleep, that would, of course, shorten the duration of time that I had available. Sometimes I felt I needed a nap just after getting breakfast ready. And even when I was awake, I felt kind of foggy, like I would describe moving through soft cheese to the next action or the next thought. I have a chronic illness, even though I didn't always recognize it as such. I thought I might be depressed. I thought I might be lazy. Other people told me, you've just done too many things for too long and it caught up to you. Some questioned if I wasn't just tired of graduate school because they said, you look too young to be so tired or so achy or so irritable. The fact is that I was sick. I was out of spoons. So what is it with these spoons in the title of the sermon this morning? Author of the website called ButYouDon'tLookSick.com, Christina Miserando, who has fibromyalgia and lupus, shared a story of a conversation with her best friend in college, where they went from talking about music or trivial things and got serious about Christina's illness. So here's a shortened version of that story told from Christina's perspective. I was sitting and talking with Samantha over French fries. As I went to take some of my medicine with a snack, as I usually do, and Samantha just watched me with this sort of awkward stare, instead of just continuing our conversation like normal. She asked me out of the blue what it felt like to have lupus and be sick. I was shocked, not only because she asked this seemingly random question, but also because I assumed all this time that she had known what my life was like. She came to doctors with me. She saw me walk with a cane sometimes. She had seen me cry in pain. What else was there to know? I started to ramble on about pills and aches and pains, but she kept pursuing, and she didn't seem satisfied with my answers. I was a little surprised, since she'd been my roommate for a few years. Then she looked at me with that face that every sick person knows well, the face of pure curiosity that someone who's healthy couldn't understand. She asked me what it felt like, not physically, but what it felt like to be me. She asked this question that I have never been able to really fully answer for myself. If I can't explain to my best friend, how could I explain my world to anyone else? And at that moment, the spoon theory was born. I quickly grabbed every spoon on the table. Heck, I went to other tables and I grabbed their spoons. I looked her in the eyes and I said, "Here you go. You have lupus." Samantha looked at me pretty confused, as anyone would be if they were handed a bouquet of spoons. She grabbed them with excitement. I asked her to count her spoons. I explained that when you're healthy, you expect to have a never-ending supply of spoons. But when you now have to plan your day, you need to know exactly how many spoons you're starting with. It doesn't guarantee that you might not lose some along the way, but at least it helps to know what you're starting with. So she counted out 12 spoons. She laughed and she said she wanted more. I said no, and she looked disappointed. "I've wanted more spoons for years," Christina said, "and haven't found a way to get more, so why should you?" I also told Samantha to be conscious of how many she had all the time and not to drop them, because you could never forget that you had lupus. I asked her to list off the tasks for her day, including the most simple. As she rattled off daily chores or fun things she wanted to do, I explained how each were going to cost her a spoon. When she jumped right into getting ready to go to work, I explained that as her first task of the morning, she was going to have to crack open her eyes and then realize she was late, how she didn't sleep well the night before. She'd have to crawl out of bed and then make herself something to eat before she could take her medication. And if you don't take your medication, well, you might as well just give all your spoons away for today and maybe for tomorrow as well. I quickly took away a spoon, and she realized she hadn't even gotten dressed yet. So another showering cost her a spoon. Getting dressed, that was worth another spoon. You can't just simply throw on clothes if you're feeling sick. If I was fatigued or my hands hurt that day, then buttons were out of the question. I think she was starting to understand how theoretically she couldn't even get to work by the time she only had 6 spoons left. I explained to her that when her spoons were gone, they were gone. Sometimes maybe you can borrow against tomorrow's spoons, but just think how hard tomorrow might be with less of those spoons. You don't want to run low because you never know when you'll truly need them. We went through the rest of her day, and she slowly learned that skipping lunch would cost her a spoon, standing on a train, or even typing at her desk too long. She was forced to make choices and think about things differently. When we got to the end of her day, she said she was hungry. I summarized that you have to eat, but you only have one spoon left, so if you cook your dinner, you won't be able to clean up the dishes. And if you go out, you might risk not being able to drive home safely. I rarely saw Samantha emotional, and I didn't want my friend to be upset, but at the same time, I was happy to think that maybe someone understood me. Maybe this was a way I could explain my life. She had tears in her eyes and asked me quietly, "Christine, how do you do it? How do you really deal with all these spoons and counting them every day?" I explained that some days were worse than others. Some days I had more spoons than most. I handed her another spoon that I'd been having in reserve. I said, "I have learned to live life with an extra spoon in my pocket. You need to always be prepared. It's hard. The hardest thing is to not slow down, to not be able to slow down, or to choose to not do everything. I fight to this day." I wanted her to understand that everything everyone does may seem like it comes so easy, but for me, it can be 100 little jobs in one. It's in that lifestyle, the difference between being sick and being healthy is that ability to not think and to just do. "I miss that freedom," Christine says. "I miss never having to count spoons." During the most ill periods of my own life, I wish I'd had this spoon theory to help me explain things to people I love, to professors, to other people in my life. I wish I could have explained to the communities I loved why I wasn't able to show up or be a part. I wish I had known, too, that I was a spoonie, as so many are calling themselves who have learned from Christina's story. Now, the condition I have, which is a profound form of hypothyroidism due to a few benign masses and subsequent surgeries, it evens out for long periods of time. I'm actually in a period of what maybe normal or healthy might look like and have been for about 2.5 years. But I know that it can and it will likely change throughout my lifetime. I also know that being a graduate student protected me against a lot of the vulnerabilities and economic issues that over 100 million people with chronic illness in this country have to deal with. High records of underinsurance, not having enough coverage to get through all the appointments and care that's needed. The inability to access care because you're not able to work sufficient hours, or being maxed out by the number of co-payments or services that determine well-being. For some people I've worked with, maybe even some of the people you know, maybe even you, that hours on hours of a day can be spent on hold trying to get care or get care covered, and that could use up all the spoons. Christina's story ends on a hopeful note. She writes, "Walking out of the diner, I gave Samantha a hug. I had one final spoon in my hand, and I said, 'Don't worry. I see this as a blessing. I have been forced to think about everything that I do. Do you know how many spoons people waste every day? I don't have room for wasted time or wasted spoons, and I choose to spend this spoon with you.'" Christina and people who cope with chronic illness give a piece of themselves in every sense of the word when they do anything. Even church uses a spoon. Participating in communities such as our Unitarian Universalist church communities can be life-giving as well as challenging. And this extends to caregivers, to people whose full-time or much of the time life is providing care for the people they love. Spoon theory may help explain what it's like for people with chronic illnesses and their families to move through the world every day. It might help each of us refrain from saying insensitive things or making assumptions, even if someone doesn't look sick. But there is a lot that those of us who want to form a welcoming community can also actively do or say. First, we can believe people with chronic conditions. When they tell us what their life is like or their limitations are, what challenges they're facing, "I believe you" is possibly one of the most powerful things we can say to one another. When we affirm our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, I think that this is part of our covenant. We are saying, "We will believe in you. We will believe your experience." When someone with a chronic condition makes an attempt to go to an event or participate in our communities, thanking them for using their energy, using their spoons to spend time with us here. Reminding people that they don't have to feel bad if they have to cancel something at the last second because they're not up to it. We want them to be safe. We want them to conserve spoons in ways that will allow them to survive. I know that this was the most difficult thing for me during my sickest times. I had serious fear of missing out, or FOMO, as the acronym goes, and even fear of disappointing people. To practice self-care is not a Beverly Hills spa day. Rather, it's the fundamental spark of being in right relationship with one another. I believe that each of us, spoonies and non-spoonies, can strengthen community resilience, can use our vulnerability as a source of our power. We can be the reserve spoon in our collective back pocket, learning from the strategies that people with chronic illness have developed to survive, to reach out for support, and thrive. Together, this is a way we can live into our faith, mission, and visions. We can sing together, use our song like a match, just as in the poem we heard. Let it fill our rooms, knowing that it will fill our rooms, opening rooms of its own, showing us that our house is indeed this large. Our circle of care and community can be this wide. I know that your community will be working on your mission and visions next week. I leave you with this prayer for your work together. With our bodies as guides, may we make meaning of the memories held there. May we honor the creaky joints, the stomach butterflies, the old scars, and the lessons they hold. Lessons from times you were brave, times you endured, which have delivered you to this very moment. May we engage our Unitarian Universalist covenants, knowing we each have a body that deserves our attention and care. In a world that cries out for our courage, may we act from that embodied wisdom. Thank you for using one of your spoons to be with us today. Happy Pride Month and lots of love.